Good morning. All right, I'll try to get through this without crying. I had the wonderful privilege of leading the team to Belize, and it was really good. I encourage you to be talking to each one of us, asking us questions, having us share. We have a lot to share, and we're not going to be able to share everything today. To explain a little bit of what we're doing today, there'll be five of us sharing for 5 minutes or so, and then I'll have give the opportunity for the others, if they want to share a quick moment or a favorite memory from the trip, to come up as well. So the other 11 of you, be thinking of that as we're talking up here. The scripture that came to mind and a theme that came to mind for me, obviously we had the song, Loving the Least of These, and I think that's really good. But for me, I wore this shirt for a reason. Receive love, give love, and repeat. And we all have the opportunity to receive God's love. And if we have received God's love, we are commanded to show love to others and then continue that process of receiving God's love on a regular basis and giving his love to others as well. So John 15:12 is the verse that came to mind. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. I think sometimes we have a hard time doing that. His love is perfect, and I think we did well on this trip in fulfilling that commandment, and I'm excited to share with you a little bit. What I will be doing is kind of sharing some of the schedule and some numbers and a little bit of the work project that we did. So the next slide. First off, we want to thank you. This trip wouldn't have been possible without this congregation. You guys helped in so many ways. You supported us in so many ways through prayer, through getting your hands dirty with eating chicken and bringing in pop cans and volunteering and doing baked goods. I was overwhelmed by the support that you guys gave us. It was really amazing. And the emotional support that you gave us. And, of course, the financial support, which we'll get to here in a minute, was really overwhelming. One of my goals at the beginning of this planning stage was to have everyone covered 100% and to be able to give the orphanage a gift. And we gave them a gift financially. And I believe they gave us a gift of loving us as well. So looking at some numbers. This is the money that was given to the home. We gave $1,440 for lodging. They have a beautiful guest house that sleeps up to 50 people, and so has its own kitchen and a covered place to eat your dinners and meals. It was really quite nice, other than the scorpions in the shower. So we gave that, and it was really overall a very cheap lodging price. It was only $10 per night per person. You can't really get that anywhere else. So we also gave $4,000 towards the work project. And I'll talk a little bit more about the work project here in a little bit. But that went towards hiring a crew that would come out, and we would work alongside of them. And then just over $8,500 was given on top of those two as a gift to the orphanage, which I was hoping to give a couple thousand. $8,500 made me about fall over. So that is a total of almost $14,000 that we were able to give to the orphanage as a financial help for them. So continuing on with the numbers, each person was supported. Each person's trip cost about $1,550, okay, which is a total of just under $25,000. So that's a large amount of money for us to raise A lot of the money was raised through personal support, but a lot of the money was raised right here with this congregation, with really generous givers and donations, and obviously help with the fundraisers. We want to thank you as a group. The Children's Home wants to thank you. That money is going to be a blessing to them. Legally, they have 85 children. That's what they can say. That's how many they're allowed to have. They have over 100, to be honest. So the bills are big. The grocery bill is big. The electric bill is over $2,000 a month with this brand new orphanage that they have been blessed with. So they need support, and we've been blessed to be able to bless them with support. So thank you. The $8,500 really would not have been possible without this congregation, without the team going out and sending letters out and asking for money, going door to door sometimes with selling chicken barbecue tickets and just going out and really seeking help from others. Okay, so the next part I want to do is just give you an overview of each day's schedule for anyone that likes to know exactly what we did. This is kind of what happened. So this is the first day. This is Thursday, July 10th. We got to meet at church at 3:15 a.m., so it was a nice early morning, and we left by 3:30. Everyone was on time, so that was good. We got to the airport. We went through security. They tell you to get there 2 hours early, and we got through it maybe in a half an hour and then sat for over an hour, so that was fun. We got on the plane at 5:30 a.m. and sat around for quite a while. Went out on the runway, sat there for a while, and then the pilot told us there's some issues, we're trying to solve them, just hold tight. So eventually we actually had to get off the plane just to wait 15 minutes to board back on the plane. So that was a little frustrating, but we were going with it, and they let us know that our connecting flight in Atlanta would be delayed. So we trusted them. Which probably wasn't a good idea, but all in God's planning. So we arrived in Atlanta 15 minutes after our connecting flight to Belize left. That was the last flight to Belize that day, and it left without 14 of us. The Schlabachs were already down in Belize at that time. So we got a pretty good deal out of it. They put us up in a hotel and paid for 3 of our meals. So that was pretty nice. Overall, I was very impressed with our group. No one was freaking out, making my job really difficult. So that was a huge blessing to me as the leader. They just went with the flow and really didn't get upset at all by the delay. So after that, we ate lunch at the airport. Then we went back to the hotel, checked in, rested, or swam in a pool, because the morning was a little exhausting just with the back and forth of everything. Then we had devotion and went to bed. Looking at Friday, day 2, we went back to the airport. So because they had to rebook us, we were actually in 2 different groups. Me and the Kiffers had the pleasure of waking up around 3 o'clock again. To go back to the airport while the rest of the group got to sleep in and have a nice hot breakfast at the hotel. So me and the Kiffers went down to Miami for our connecting flight, and we actually both groups arrived in Belize around the same time, which was around 11 a.m. their time, which is a 2-hour time difference. So it was 1 a.m. here, or 1 p.m. here. So then we went through customs and then took our hour trip van, 15-passenger van ride back to, or not back to, but to the orphanage, or to the children's home. That was interesting. The driving's a little different down there. Thankfully, it's all on the right-hand side of the road and that type of thing. But our van wasn't working very well, and I got to drive, and it was just fun. So we got in. We got there. We settled into our rooms. We met Mom, who is the starter and the runner of the orphanage. She's been doing this for 29 years, and you'll get to hear more about her in a little bit from, I believe, somebody else. Then we went shopping for our groceries and cooked dinner, had devotions, and went to bed. So Saturday, day three, we wake up around 7 or earlier, have breakfast by 7:30, and then church that was actually on Saturday. They celebrate church on Saturday, and that was from 9 to 12. We didn't ask how long it was going to be, so there was a number of times that we thought it was ending. We were about to stand up, and then it kept going. But it was a really great service. It was great worshiping with the kids. And the kids really put on most of the service, which was really cool to see. So after church, we had some lunch back at the home, and then we went and toured the capital of Belize, Belmopan, from 1 to 3. And then after that, we just played with the kids, interacted with the kids, that type of thing, until dinner, and then devotions, and we played a lot of card games after devotions each night, mainly golf with Skippo cards. Then Sunday and Monday, day 4 and 5, I put them together because they're fairly identical in what we did. 7:30 breakfast, 8 to 12, we were either working on the fence, our work project, or we were with the children. At lunch time, 12 to 1, and then from 1 to 5, we worked again or played with the kids, interacting with them. We had dinner on, I think it was Monday that we handed out the gifts to the children, or maybe it was both nights. My memory escapes me a little bit there. But we brought some gifts down as a group to hand out, and the mom of the orphanage also buys some necessities like shampoo and deodorant and that type of thing to hand out to the kids every month or two. So that all happened all at once. So that was kind of a neat experience to be giving out those gifts to the kids. And then we did devotions and card games. Personally, I also had the opportunity to play basketball two different times in an afternoon with some of the older kids when work was a little slow, and I saw kids bouncing the basketball in 95-degree heat. I thought, yeah, I could go play in that with steel-toed boots and jeans. So that was interesting and a lot of fun. Moving on to day 6, Tuesday, that was our day of excursion. You will see a slideshow of some of those pictures at the end of the sermon time. We drove for 30 minutes, and what we did that day was zip lining and cave tubing. Zip lining, if you've ever been to Beaver Camp, there's a zip line. You go up a tree, you go down. This was six or seven zip lines in a row, and some of them were probably 7 times longer than Beaver Camp zip line. So it was a lot of fun. We went over the river a couple times. That was really cool. And then we went cave tubing after that, which is basically you sit in a big tube and you float down a river that goes through a mountain. And there's bats and darkness and amazing sights and sounds to listen to. So that was really cool as well. We all thoroughly enjoyed those activities. We had a buffet lunch there. And then got back to the home, went shopping for some more groceries, had dinner, devotions, and then card games again. When we went grocery shopping, we stopped for some milkshakes, but their milkshakes aren't quite like they are here. Wednesday and Thursday, day 7 and 8, again, we're fairly similar in what we did. 7:30 breakfast, 8 to 12, we worked or played with kids. Lunch from 12 to 1, 1 to 5, worked or played, dinner, devotions, card games, and then also Thursday night we got to celebrate Becky's 18th birthday, and that was very enjoyable. We had some pizza and some cake, so that was just a nice celebration for her and for us, really. And we sang happy birthday to her a lot. With dinner at the orphanage, we always ate separate from the rest, from the kids in the home. And a number of times we would have a group of us go and wash dishes afterwards, which was quite the undertaking, if you can imagine, over 100 kids and dirty dishes, and sometimes your kids don't eat the whole plate full of food, so there's a lot of food left over or whatever, but many hands make light work, so that went well. Friday, getting down to our last full day, day 9, we worked in the morning, or played with the kids. It was our last day with the work project on the fence. We had lunch, and then we went out and went for about an hour drive out to the Mayan ruins, which was really a great experience, really beautiful views. We got to see some big lizards and some howler monkeys, and thankfully no one fell off any top of any of the pyramids or whatever you call them, because we were high, and they don't have safety like they do in the U.S., which was cool and scary. Then we went out for dinner as a group, kind of celebrating our time there. Went to a family restaurant called El Rancho, and enjoyed our time there. And when we got back to the home, we got to hear Mom's testimony, which is very powerful. That was kind of our devotion for the night. And we prayed with her, asking God to continue giving her strength support at that orphanage. We played some card games and then went on our way to bed. Day 10, Saturday, really was getting up, eating, packing, cleaning the guest house, and then saying goodbye to the children. They were actually on their way to church. So as they kind of filed out to the school bus to squeeze in, we got to say our final goodbyes. We did say goodbye the day before as well, just because you had more time to do that. But we gave our last hugs that day as well. We left for the airport. There were no delays, and we got back to Buffalo around 11:30 p.m. With a number of people waiting to surprise us and greet us and take us home. So that was great. Moving on to the work projects. Really, we worked on a chain link fence and by pouring cement at the bottom. So kids or animals couldn't crawl underneath, and it just made the structure of the fence a lot safer, a lot more sturdy. Kevin and I worked every day that we could, moving the forms, the wooden forms that we basically made by hand. And then we also poured the concrete. On days that we poured the concrete, we had as many people from our group help. We did have a few of the older boys from the home come out and help too, and they showed us up because they were very strong. And they've done this before. So that was really good. We basically poured concrete on the entire length of the back fence, the back part of the property. And they have 40 acres there, I believe. I'm not sure if the fence went the entire width of those 40 acres, but it was pretty long. Many hands made light work for that too. There was a lot of mixing and that type of thing. So here's just a couple pictures. You saw maybe a couple in the slideshow. You have the forms on the left-hand side up top, and then the finished concrete on the right. And then on the bottom, you have a corner where they don't have concrete yet on the left, and the forms with concrete in it on the right. All the concrete needed to do was sit for overnight, and then we could take the forms off, move them down, and do it all over again. So we did that, I think, 3 or 4 times. So that was good. So that is the majority of my part. I would like to invite Mary up for her to share, and you'll see me a little bit later. Thank you.
Good morning. I get to share just really briefly a little of the history of the King's Children's Home and a little bit about Mom or Leonie's personal testimony. Leonie knew that God was calling her to take care of kids that were being abused and neglected, and she did found the Children's Home in 1985 at the age of 27. She started in a one or two bedroom house and quickly filled up and outgrew that, went to a three bedroom, then a four bedroom, and now in her new facility that's been there 7 months, she's feeling the same, you know, outgrowing that, and she's feeling a little discouraged at that. What's happening with her country of Belize that there's so many children that are hurting and needy. She also really covets all of our prayers in that she's praying for a Joshua to come alongside her as she is 55 and feeling weary. A couple verses that came to mind as I was thinking about her testimony, Romans 8:28, and we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to his purpose. Leonie found, as she was the oldest girl in a family of 14, and she had a lot of responsibility caring for her siblings, which that, of course, prepared her for taking care of the needs of hundreds. And I'm not sure just how many. Dave, do you know how many kids? Is it like 600, 700, 800? Does anybody know? That, yes.
I remember 800.
800, okay. Leonie also had a very difficult time as she was a victim of incest for many years in her family, brought her to the place of despair at the age of 13 where she tried to commit suicide. But God had a plan for Leonie's life, just like he does for every person here, and he didn't allow that attempt at suicide to succeed. And Leonie then turned to the only comfort that she knew, and she read through her Bible from cover to cover many times as a young girl. And the next verse I'd like to share, Isaiah 55:11. So shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereto I sent it. And I just thought that was really fitting for Leonie's life. As she read that word, she learned that what was happening to her wasn't right. But as she shared her testimony, something that really struck me, she learned that she was commanded by her Father God to also forgive, and she chose to forgive, and that's huge. She said she, you know, chose to forgive and to not let bitterness have a place in her heart, and because, I believe because she chose to forgive, God was able to use her and bless hundreds of kids, and I'm so glad she did, and that I had the opportunity to be there and love on those kids. Thanks.
I'm Danielle. Okay, so I have my Bible on my phone. I'm not texting. I guess just I wanted to share the main thing I learned from Belize, which was that no matter where God calls you or how far out of your comfort zone, he can always take care of you, and he'll always he can always just give you peace. Wherever he's calling you, it's where you should be. There's been mentions of scorpions and lice, and yes, both freaked me out, although I hit it very well, right? I mean, no, but every time something would come up, I just, God's got it under control, and really, there was nothing that any of us couldn't handle. He never gave us more than we could deal with, and it was just really an amazing time to get to know everybody. I have my verse here. It says, I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things, I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So, just wherever God is calling you to do, don't be scared to go do it, because that's where you should be. And I don't know who's next, but I'm done. Okay.
Good morning. All right, so I was going to start with an overview of the home itself, which some of it's already been, I probably don't need this, right? There was over 100 kids there total. The home is set up that there's a girls' dorm and a boys' dorm, so neither allowed in each other's dorms. There's about 4 to 5 kids per dorm, so there's generally 2 bunks in the dorms and then possibly 1 other single bed. And in the middle of the entire area is just a giant play area, so these kids are locked in this orphanage at all times. They can't leave the grounds without permission. The teenagers are matched with a child that is under the age of 3. So if there's a child there that's under the age of 3, their caregiver is one of the teenagers. So that's kind of their responsibility to make sure they have a bottle or are changed or are bathed. So that's obviously a lot of responsibility on these teenagers that probably aren't ready for motherhood. I think there was 4 pregnant teenagers there while we were there. And then a couple other teenagers that were raising their babies at the orphanage as well. Ages 4 through 12, they pretty much care for themselves. They take care of themselves once they're 4 years old. The diapers are expensive, so once they turn 2, they just put them in underwear, and if they wet themselves, they continue to change throughout the day. So there's a bell that someone will ring about 5 minutes before something's about to take place, generally the meals, so you'll hear the bell ring, or if it's their Seventh-day Advent, so their worship takes place on Saturday mornings. So we did get to see them load, and if you ever want to see 100 kids load into a bus quickly, I just was absolutely amazed when that bell rung. Like, and they're dressed so prim and proper on Sundays. Like, to see the kids, what they wear the same clothes every single day. Some are inside out, they're backwards, they don't look at it and say, oh, this is backwards, they just put it on. And actually, we got to know the names of a lot of the kids because they wore the same clothes every day, so we're like, oh, okay, well, we know who you are because you had that on yesterday and the day before that and the day before that. They do have washing machines, but everything's hung out to dry, so if you can imagine 100 kids worth of clothing, there's lots of lines there with lots of clothing drying at all times. They do a devotion and worship every single day, usually right after dinner, sometimes before dinner, but they do worship every day and praise the Lord a lot. And they're always, always singing, and it's always worship music. I think that's all they know is worship music, which is awesome. I talked a little about worship. Worship was almost 3 hours long in a church. I don't even know how to compare it. Maybe this size right here, and so everybody is just shoulder to shoulder and kids on top of laps and trying to keep the babies from crying. And so worship was interesting, but they started with songs and they went into a sermon, and then they broke up into groups, Bible studies or Sunday school lessons, and then they came back to worship some more. So Tessa got to go on the school bus for her lessons. So in addition to being 100 degrees, she sat on a bus where it was probably even hotter. So that there were some challenging times with the heat for sure. And it was kind of hard to control it because there's nowhere to go to cool down or anything like that. There's no hot water. If you turn the hot water spigots on, nothing comes out. So it's just cold water, cold well water. And there's no air conditioning anywhere. So you just kind of deal with the heat. I think it was 107 with the humidity most of the days is what my phone would tell me, so that's what we had. The family that stuck out to me the most was a family of 9 siblings. They had just come to the orphanage about 2 weeks before we got there. The oldest was 13, the youngest was 16 months. And we don't really know most of the stories of the kids of how they got there or why they were there, but that family really stuck out to me because it was obvious that they were still adjusting to being in the home. They were more standoffish than a lot of the kids that had been there a long time. And the baby just about broke my heart because he couldn't walk yet. He was just malnourished, and his legs and his arms were just so weak, and he was so sad. And the 13-year-old was supposed to be taking care of him, but it was very obvious that she didn't want to be a mom or really, you know, want that responsibility. So I kind of took that on, but that was really tough to leave him. So I did sob a couple times handing him back to the people at the orphanage the last couple days. That was tough for me. I made an effort to visit the dorm rooms. I would just kind of knock on the doors and just try to visit the older teenagers that didn't come out of their rooms a lot, which by the end, actually, mom decided that they weren't going to sit in their dorm rooms all summer, so she locked the dorm rooms all day and forced them to come outside. But I did spend some time with the teenagers. You know, I'd just go in and we would do selfies on my phone. They love cell phones there, so if you, you know, had a cell phone and you could do selfies and we stuck out our tongues or made silly faces or whatever we did, I really just tried to bond with some of the older ones, and I would just intentionally look for the quieter kids that, you know, there were so many there that as soon as we showed up, it was like they knew us forever, like, oh, just white people are here, they love us. And they would just come up and look for hugs and kisses. But then there was, for as many as were comfortable coming up to us, there was just as many that, you know, were in the background there watching that take place. So I think all of us did a good job in trying to make sure we communicated and, you know, loved on the ones that were quieter. So two words that stuck out to me that 90s was contentment, which they don't really have a choice, but there was a lot of contentment there, and simplicity. And simplicity is not something that, well, I'm getting better at simplicity in my life, but it's not always been easy for me. And so for me, I don't want to say that I was on a vacation that 9 days, but in my personal life, I felt like it was a vacation from everything that goes on in my day-to-day life with, you know, businesses and just so many things. And there was two short verses that stuck out to do with contentment that I want to read quick. Hebrews 13:5. Some of my verses actually have already been said this morning, but that's okay. 13:5 is, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. So, and that's been a verse that's been near and dear to me for the last several years. And Philippians 4 actually is one that Danielle just read, but I'm going to read it again. I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what is to be in need. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. So, yeah, I was just going to give the example when we got into Buffalo. It was like just a flood rush for me of, okay, there's 3 soccer games this week. I have a meeting on Thursday night. I'm having a youth group at my house on Tuesday. I have the sidewalk sale in East Aurora. And so I'm going through these things out loud to Phil. And Caleb and Elizabeth were in the back seat. And Caleb goes, wow, that was a lot of stuff you just remembered. And so it was really nice to just not have all those things rushing through my mind for those 9 days. So I enjoyed that. Tuesday, I did have a youth group at my house, and I did a devotion on spiritual gifting. And another thing we did while we were stuck in Atlanta for the night, we took like a fun personality test. So most of the group out by the pool, we kind of just decided to go over some different personalities and decide, you know, what we were. So that was a lot of fun, and that kind of ties in with spiritual gifting. And I just was really impressed by the different spiritual giftings from the 16 in the group. There's no way that I would have eaten 3 meals a day if it wasn't for Mary and Elizabeth, because they just had everything under control with grocery shopping and, you know, what they were going to make, and the food was amazing, and I just felt really well fed those 9 days, and it was definitely not my own doing. And as far as the guys, the fencing, their spiritual gifting definitely came out, because I tried the fencing for 2 hours and then I had a sore back for the rest of the day, so that was definitely not my spiritual gifting. But I did take some pictures of me in my work gear so that I could show my husband that I did concrete, and check that off my list. And so for, you know, a lot of us, our spiritual gifting was just being with the children. Just Tessa was amazing, absolutely amazing. And so when we did the devotion at my house, I was talking about spiritual gifting, and Dave made a comment, and it was just so true. He said, you'll know what your spiritual gifting is because it's what you enjoy doing. It's what you love. You know, it's if you love doing it, then there's your gift. And I was like, oh, my gosh. I loved being with the kids. That was my thing. Somebody went around with a video camera and was like, well, what's your favorite part of the trip? And, you know, everybody had their own things, and I just thought, well, duh, it was being with the kids, you know? There was no question there, so I loved that. And I just want to read one passage in Romans that ties into spiritual gifting. We have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. If your gift is prophecy, then prophecy in accordance with your faith. If it is serving, then serve. If it is teaching, then teach. If it is to encourage, then give encouragement. If it is giving, then give generously. If it is to lead, do it diligently. If it is to show mercy, do it cheerfully. And then my real lesson, I'm going to read from James. It's called, it's labeled Faith and Deeds. And actually, if you guys have a Bible, you can open to this passage so you can get it along with me. It's James 2, and it's 14 through 26. So I'll give you guys a minute just to turn there, because I'm going to close with this. And this kind of summarizes to me what all 16 of us did in our trip to Belize. What good it is, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds. Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or a sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace and keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith, I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. You believe that there is one God. Good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. You foolish person, do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless? Was not our father Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that that his faith and his actions were working together, and his faith was made complete by what he did. And the scripture was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness, and he was called God's friend. You see that a person is considered righteous by what they do and not by faith alone. In the same way, was not even Rahab the prostitute considered righteous for what she did when she gave lodging to the spies and sent them off in a different direction? As the body with the spirit is dead, so faith without deeds is dead. And so I just want to encourage everyone. One sentence I found, it says, genuine faith in Jesus will naturally express itself in kindness. And just to encourage everyone to, you know, show your faith through the deeds that you do. And I think the team did a great job of that. I think everybody went out of their comfort zones at some point, whether it just be going on the trip all together, or for me it was the heights of the zip lining and the, you know, everybody that went at some point went out of their comfort zone with the children or whatever. And so I just encourage everyone to step out of their comfort zones and do whatever the Lord is calling you to do. And my most exciting news is Phil and I, well, I've had a void for many years with, since I've had Jack, I thought maybe going into grandchildren and all of that would be enough for me, but I've definitely had a void with feeling I need more. So we are starting foster classes next month, so I'm really excited and hope that everyone will pray for us, and I feel like Belize really encouraged me to act on that, so I've been feeling that for a long time, and we've made that decision, and after watching Tessa with how amazing she is with kids, she's going to be a huge help to whatever God has planned for us, so thank you. I think Becky's next.
I have been so excited about going on this trip. I mean, even months before, I had a countdown going on. I would tell my family, I'm so excited, I can't wait to go. And then I was very surprised that when we got there, that was my biggest getting out of my comfort zone. I didn't expect it at all, but as soon as we were there, there were some of us who right away went into the orphanage, were so excited, and I kind of held back, and I wasn't sure why, and I realized I was really worried. I didn't really know how to start interacting with the kids. I didn't know what to say. In my mind, for some reason, I thought, they're so different. Like, I don't even know how to start a conversation. Finally, I was like, I need to stop worrying. God tells us not to worry. So I just went in there. I don't even think I made it inside the doors without having, like, five kids hugging my legs, trying to jump all over me, and it totally just took all my worry away. These kids don't care. They don't care if you don't know how to talk to them or if you don't know what to say. They'll talk to you, especially the younger ones. They love having people there. They will try to climb all over you, which you have to tell them a lot. No, I'm not picking you up. Like, they just want to be loved so bad. And the lessons that I learned on this trip, a lot of them came from the kids. These kids range from the age of 1 to 22. There's just all different ages, and it's really amazing. The younger kids are normally the ones who will come up to you, who will just want to play games, just want to sit on your lap, braid your hair. They're the ones that really come out to you, and you don't really have to invite yourself to, but there's also older ones that need just as much attention. But there's one thing that stuck out to me the most, and this was almost with every single one of them. They do not have as much as we do. In America, we have a lot of stuff that we don't need at all. Yet at the same time, we're very selfish about our things. There's a lot of things that personally I wouldn't be okay with giving up. These kids have pretty much nothing, yet they wanted to give us their stuff. They make these bracelets, and they make them by the hand. They don't, like here we do them with like a little loom thing. No, they just figure it out how to do it with their hands. And they, normally they only have like one or two. I think I came home with like three of them because these kids just wanted to give them away, and they wanted us to remember them with something even though they didn't have it. And even not even just with us, a lot of the older ones, like said before, they take care of the younger ones. And there was multiple times, I know I didn't personally experience this, but Danielle was telling us the one day that there was a boy who had missed his lunch, and so sometimes they come late, and the people in the kitchen, they'll give them their meals, and they always have fresh bread. That was one thing. They make fresh bread every single day. We helped out with that a lot. But there was a little boy sitting there eating his bread, and then a younger one came up and just tapped him on the shoulder, and he split the bread in half and gave it to the little boy. There's not much, but he still shared it. And we also brought a lot of treats, a lot of Ring Pops and Smarties, lots of sugary stuff that they absolutely loved. And they would line up. I mean, the word would get through the home, and they would just line up for these, and they got so excited. But even though they got so excited, if one of their friends had somehow missed getting the candy, they would give it away. They wouldn't even think about it. There was this one 14-year-old girl who I had the privilege of getting to know at the end of the week, and she had three pieces of candy, and some of the girls that she rooms with did not get any, and she gave every single piece away. And it just amazed me because at the same time, all of us were like, oh, we want Ring Pops, we want candy. And I mean, we have the privilege of having that stuff all the time, yet these kids don't, and they were just so eager to give it away, and they just look out for each other. And it made me realize how much we have and yet how little we're willing to give away. One verse that I had found that really stuck out to me with that was Philippians 2, 3 through 4. It says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. This just really, I mean, obviously, there's some things that go on there. Obviously, not every kid, I mean, they all want stuff, but at the same time, they all look out for each other. I mean, they have to. They're there. There's not a lot of staff there, so they really have to look out for each other. And just seeing how they live and the simplicity of it, it made me realize how much stuff I have that I don't really need. Going through, right now I'm boxing up stuff in my room to get ready for college and redoing rooms in the house and stuff, so getting rid of stuff. I realize that I have stuff from my freshman year of high school that I still have that I really don't need that's sat in my room. And just going through it, I think before this trip, it's almost a good thing that I'm doing this after because there's a lot of things I probably would have held on to, but now I realize that I have some things that are in perfect condition that I don't need because I'm not using them, and a lot of other people could use them. Another big thing that really stuck out to me was the end of the week. Like I had mentioned, I was talking to a 14-year-old girl. They did lock the dorms, so it made some of the older ones come out of their rooms for a little while. So I had been talking to her, and she had told me the entire time we talked, she was like, I just want to go to sleep. She's like, I just sleep all day. And that's just what she normally does. I hadn't really seen her before, and that's because she just sat in her room and slept all day. And so I had asked her, I was like, well, why do you sleep all day? She's like, because I don't like talking to people. I said, talking's great. I talk all the time. So I was like, why don't you like to talk to people? And her answer, she didn't have to think about it at all. And she said, because everyone leaves. And that totally broke my heart. And it made me feel guilty because I was leaving the next day. And she had even said that. She was like, just like you're leaving tomorrow. And so I asked her, I said, then why are you talking to me if I'm just going to leave? She goes, I don't know. You're special. There's just something different about you. And before we had gone on the trip, we had team building days, and we had read an article and it was called The Good Missionary, and it talked about the impact that missionaries have, and sometimes it's a good impact, sometimes it's bad. And the one thing that they talked about was building lasting relationships and taking it further than just going for a week. And in my mind, I had read that, and I was like, I just don't know how that would be possible. Like, I don't know how you'd reach out. And then after talking to this girl, it just all made sense. And, like, these kids do need a lasting relationship because they're so used to just people coming in and out of their lives. I mean, they're so used to it that it doesn't matter. There was other groups that were there at the same time we were that only came for a few hours, and they would get up off our laps and just go and hug them. Like, it didn't matter who you were. They're so used to people coming in and out. But to see some of these older kids who really desire a lasting relationship, that want to talk to someone who's going to be there for more than just a week. And I think so far, I mean, we're already planning on sending stuff to the kids. And the girl had asked me if I would write her a letter and if I would send her a picture so she could remember me. And, like, I plan on doing these things because this girl just totally broke my heart and totally, even all, like, all the little kids were adorable, but this girl just, I don't know, just the things that she said and the way she said it, it just made me want to have, like, a lasting connection. So that's something that really touched me and really made sense. And so I guess my new desire is to make lasting connections, to try to send them stuff and just maybe go back someday, but just really try not to just have that 1 week relationship, but just continue it and show them that we do care and it's not just a 1 week thing.
Thanks for everyone that shared. I do want to invite anyone else that went on the trip that wants to say their favorite memory or just something quick. If you want to come up now, I'll even stand next to you so you're not too nervous.
What I enjoyed about this trip was I really enjoyed working on the fence and pouring concrete.
I just want to say how a blessing it was to be a part of this group and be on this trip. As you all can have seen and heard from us that, you know, these kids are absolutely beautiful and impacted us all. And it was just an incredible experience to be with them. And it's really prepared me for Africa in so many ways. So I just want to thank you all. I appreciate all your support and prayers. So thank you.
Okay, so thank you for all the prayers for me and the group. I had an amazing time in Belize, and I'm so that was a cough, not crying. And I'm so happy I went back to Belize where I was born. And I don't know, I just feel so blessed that I got to go back, and thank you. So yeah.
There was one particular little boy that made an impression on me. His name was Randy. He was the second youngest of the sibling group of nine. I think Tara mentioned them. They came to the orphanage a few weeks ago. He was a very shy little boy, and he wouldn't meet my eye the morning I first met him. He would cling to his brother's hand. He wouldn't let go. If his brother ever left his side, he would start crying. And I tried to comfort him, but he didn't seem to appreciate that very much. However, as the day went on, he seemed to open up to me and start playing with me. And by later in the afternoon, he was laughing and playing with me without worrying about if his brother was around or by his side. And we played together until the dinner bell rang. And as he headed toward the dining hall, he turned around with a huge smile and waved enthusiastically at me. And it was just awesome to see a little boy who obviously has been through so much because he's been at the orphanage, to open up to me and laugh and have a good time, although he has been through a lot and he does have a rough life.
My favorite part was just hanging out with the kids and getting to know them. I especially liked hanging out with the little ones in the nursery, and I also liked the excursion days when we got to go ziplining.
Yeah, I forgot to bring Becky had kind of mentioned the bracelets and the what they called rubbers. I had brought some looms and some rubber bands, not sure what they were going to do, or and crocheting stuff. And that, to them, was really something. They kept asking throughout the week, do you have any more rubbers? Do you have any more rubbers? Someone obviously had been there before us. I had brought two looms, trying to figure out how to do the bracelets. But most of them knew how to do it just with their fingers, and did some really amazing bracelets. And I ended up with three, which I forgot to wear this morning. But how neat that was for them, something so simple, just the little rubber bands to make the bracelets. Do you have any more rubbers? Do you have any more rubbers? So I promised them that I would send them before their school start, which is also in September, same as ours, enough rubber bands so that each child could have a bag of 500 so that they could have bracelets. But I was just touched as to how something so simple meant so much and how creative they were with that. And with Tara saying the giftings, I hadn't really quite thought, but I focused mostly on one girl who I taught crocheting and kind of worked, and then we also worked with reading. They come at different levels. There were six other ladies throughout the time we were there. Majority of them were teachers. So they were working particularly on reading, education, studying. And the girl that I taught how to crochet was kind of reading at like a second grade-ish level. But she had brought her words with me at the couple days. So 2 or 3 days, we sat there and went through her 3 pages of reading words, which was neat for me because I guess I kind of like to teach and hadn't quite thought of that as a gifting, but until Tara mentioned that, it's like, yeah, I focused on her. We taught, we worked. But that was just kind of neat working with them. And Mary and I had fun in the kitchen and shopping. Yay.
Okay, thank you, everybody. It was a blessing to go with you and to lead you. I would like to end in prayer, a prayer that I believe Tara led us in. One of the first days we were there. So I'll read this as a prayer to God and, for these children. I encourage you to keep them in your prayers. And then after the prayer, we have a slideshow of kind of the excursions and the fun other fun times that we had outside the home. Let's pray. Lord, I lift these children up to you and ask that you would put a hedge of protection around them. Protect their spirit, body, mind, and emotions from any kind of evil or harm. I pray specifically for the protection from accidents, disease, injury, or any other physical, mental, or emotional abuse. I pray that they will make their refuge in the shadow of your wings until these calamities have passed by. Hide them from any kind of evil influences that would come against them. Keep them safe from any hidden dangers. And let no weapon formed against them be able to prosper. Thank you, Lord, for your many promises of protection. Help them to walk in your ways and in obedience to your will, so that they never come out from underneath the umbrella of that protection. Keep them safe in all that they do and wherever they go. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing. You all were intentional about taking a trip to Belize so that you could minister there among in that children's home. I want to read to you just this verse. After Jesus, when Jesus met with the 4,000 people, Jesus called his disciples to him and said, "I have compassion for these people. They have already been with me 3 days, and they have nothing to eat. I do not want to send them away hungry, or they may collapse on the way." The Gospels tell us repeatedly about Jesus' compassion for people who are in need. And my challenge for you this morning, as we heard from the mission team, is to be intentional about ministering his compassion to those who are in need. We have a tendency to get kind of insulated in our lives. We live in, most of us, in a sort of middle-class place where we're kind of insulated from some of the people that are most needy. And we're busy. And so what I want to encourage you to do is don't wait for the next mission trip. There are many ministries around us, not too far away, some in Buffalo, some right here in Alden, that need people to volunteer. And so be intentional and maybe become a volunteer is one of the challenges I want to give you this morning, to meet some of those needs as we minister and have compassion just as Jesus did.